that even can be mainstreamed within the Department of Health, perhaps they can be able to be assisted. Further research in partnership with other research institutions and institutions of higher learning should be done on the issue of female initiation. This is one area where we found that, especially in some areas in China, where we find that it is alleged that there are females that are kept in the name of initiation schools and permits are given by the municipality, but no one really knows what is going on in those schools, which creates a bit of a challenge because it looks like there's a lot of abuse that goes on behind the scene, and no one is taking any responsibility because they don't know what is happening. They say it's a female initiation. So we are very much suspicious on these arrangements that there could be worse things happening and women could be victims around these matters. So we need to do a little bit of deeper research so that we can be able to understand what goes on there. There should be a special focus on the protection of initiates coming from single female headed households, just to support them. We leave that project. It's just one of those that we've produced in 2017-18, this initiation report. So we thought perhaps it would be better to share those recommendations. Some cases we dealt with in 2017-18 financial year, which are also likely to continue in 2018-19 financial year. The complaint on halal foods and their impact to other religious communities. I'm sure you've already seen it on the media, I think from last week and not 2 weeks ago. The commission received a complaint on this matter and the commission has already started work on it, but it is likely to continue to this financial year. Recycling of graves by Etekwini Municipality is still in progress. The last month, if not two, we had actually made a follow-up with the municipality and the mayor. They've requested the time so that they can be able to go and check other things that we were raising. And we are going to meet them this month to try and get a feedback on the matter. But we have also included the premier's office to assist so that, you know, there's some kind of synergy and a good oversight provided to what is happening in the municipality if it is in line with the provincial legislations and so on and so forth. So this matter will still continue even in this coming financial year. Like I'm saying, we are meeting, I'm sure it's the 25th, 26th of this month with them again. The monument built on graves in Alwal North, the case still continues in this financial year. We've done our investigations and observations. We're engaging the Department of Arts and Culture in the province with our recommendations so that we can see if we can be able to conclude this matter, and then we'll give the feedback to the complainants. The graves underwater, the case in Fenterstorp, reburial to a new space recommended for the municipality to implement. We talked about this case in our previous engagement, and we want to report that this case is now finalized and the municipality managed to implement the recommendation made in relation to reburial to a new space. These are just some few cases that we're singling out so that we can give an update, but there are quite a many other cases that we did not cover in this slide. The commission managed to complete and table its report on commercialization of religion and abuse of people's belief system to Parliament. I think this is the report that kept the committee and ourselves busy together with the South Africans. So it is the conclusion of our report that we've tabled it in June to Parliament, and that's where it is now. But we in the new financial year, we're also thinking of going back to the Eastern Cape, because although we cannot confirm yet, but we understand that the same issues that happened in Engcobo, apparently it had already spread over the Eastern Cape. There are a number of churches like that were planted, and we want to see if we can identify them and engage the religious leaders together with the traditional leaders in terms of providing information and educating the communities so that they can be aware of such kind of practices. The right of access to ancestral graves investigation project, this was launched in February in our in the previous financial year, and it's likely also to continue. I will flag it when we come to 2018-19 targets. We also had a roundtable discussion on cult, sects, and the church definition and characteristics debate, and the inputs of and the outcomes of that debate are being assessed by the commission so that we can be able to see how we can intervene and help in the process. We also managed to launch the multilingualism project in the previous financial year, and this project then will continue in the new financial year. It will also be part of that, which I'll flag in 2018-19. Roundtable discussions on the resuscitation of the Khoi and San culture, religion, and language as a diminished heritage was conducted here in Cape Town. And this is also something that I will flag again for 2018-19 so that we know what will take place there. We managed to do the capacity building workshops for religious community councils in different provinces as per the expectations of our plan. The dialogues were facilitated with community councils on the role of religious leaders in promoting and protecting the religious rights of communities. This was it was a continuation of the engagements that we were doing with the religious leaders in different provinces, giving feedback in terms of the report that we had actually, you know, compiled. Capacity building on cultural, religious, and language rights, as reflected in the Bill of Rights and CRL Act 19 of 2002, were conducted to different CRL rights communities, just to raise awareness on the rights of communities when it comes to religion, culture, and language. Awareness campaigns were organized on sign language, targeting the deaf community, and in addition, discussions on the commercialization of religion report targeting the religious leaders and communities were facilitated. So these are continuous engagements that we had of doing public education to communities. 100% of cases received by the commission under the in the same financial year were processed, developed, implemented communications and marketing strategies that we had planned for, and developed and implemented information and technology strategy as per our plan. Expenditure reports and financial statements were produced as per the audit requirements, asset register reconciliations and asset verifications conducted, and of course policies were revised as we normally do before the end of each financial year, and then formal performance assessments were conducted and will be concluded this quarter for the fourth quarter. Performance information reports were also compiled as per our strategic plan, and internal audit reports were compiled and presented to audit committee meetings, and engagements with the committees here in Parliament were taking place as was expected. Same applies to the governance structures of the Commission. Plenary and Section 22 committees managed to sit and do their work four times in a year, and that was according to the plan. I then come to the targets for 2018-19, the activities that the commission will be commissioned to. Access to Graves project that we launched in February will continue. Investigations will continue in other provinces not covered in the previous financial year. So far, in terms of the investigations, we've covered Limpopo, we've covered, I think, Durban, and then we will be going to other provinces. The purpose is to promote African religious practices, but also fostering peace between and amongst the farm owners, workers, and African communities. Let me flag, Chair, that we've got a number of complaints coming from the farm workers in terms of them not being accessing the space in terms of their graves. Maybe they've been working in those farms for many, many years, and some of their people were buried there, but when others now want to be buried there, the access is denied. So we decided to also do these kind of investigations, but also to engage the farm owners as well as the farm workers as to say, how can we try and mitigate the challenge so that they can be able to work together. Lack of access to ancestral graves and understanding of the African spirituality, especially in farms, is a threat to peace, tolerance, humanity and nation building. I remember, Chairperson, it may seem a very minor issue, but if we recall 2005-06, there was somebody in Limpopo who spent 12 months without being buried because this person could not get access to the farm to be buried until some gender, civil society and courts had to push the farm owner to open up for the burial. So this kind of challenges are prominent in many areas, in the rural areas. Conduct research, investigations, and organize campaigns on promotion of multilingualism. The activities will focus on challenges related to the use of official languages in schools, points of service delivery, and other critical areas where it is applicable. The aim will be to foster tolerance, social cohesion, and nation building in a democratic South Africa. Language is becoming, the use of language in schools is becoming a challenge in many of our communities. And actually, some of the students' organizations that we have engaged in our efforts to debate and understand the issue, they are saying that even in schools, where teachers are actually teaching the content, when they run short of certain words in English, they switch to their, indigenous languages or to their mother tongues. But the challenge is when the learner is supposed to go and write an exam and is stuck, he's not allowed to switch to the mother tongue. And that then we feel that it is unfair on the learner's side because the teachers are able to switch and talk to different languages. But learners should also be given a space where possible to also express themselves where they are stuck in terms of their mother tongue so that they can be able to write their exams much easier. So this is a debate that the Commission will be leading and trying to understand the issues and see how we can bring in the Department of Basic Education so that we can see how we can be able to deal with the issues. This report will also be compiled towards the end of the financial year so that we can come up with mitigating factors in terms of the challenges raised. But I'm just giving that as just one example, but there are lots of language challenges related to language in schools. If you check the VAL in Johannesburg and many other schools, the Hude Hoop now that we are talking about the residents and the language issues. So there are a number of them, and we think that perhaps if we zoom into this, we should be able to find one another and still coexist, although we are different in terms of our languages. The next slide is about, on this very same multilingualism, the results of the research and investigation will culminate into a report and recommendations that will assist Parliament in coming up with a national policy on the use of official and diminishing indigenous languages in schools, commerce, service delivery points, and institutions of learning as part of promoting and protecting these languages. Review and consolidate the researched work on the Khoisan language, culture, and religion. The roundtable that we had around this matter here in Cape Town had actually created a space for us or a platform for us to want to assist the community through looking at the work that has been done when it comes to the Khoisan people, language, culture, and religion, so that we can be able to assist going forward in terms of promoting and protecting their language, their culture, and religion. Because there are always claims that it's either diminished or it's diminishing as we speak. So we want to find a way in which we can assist. Focus on the resolution of conflict between and within cultural, religious, and linguistic communities, or between any such community and an organ of state, will continue dealing with the cases that comes in the commission, will be continuous work. Of course, we'll also focus on what is expected in an organization, creating organizational efficiency, creating and installing internal controls, upgrading security as advised by the South African State Security Agency. This we are doing every year. We select something small and then we improve the security, and we'll still do the same in the coming financial year. Chair, we just want to share the allocations, economic classification there for 2018-21, the transfer that we get from COCTA, and how we're going to spread it and use it, the expenditure there. In the next slide, it then gives details also to some other programs within the organization for 2018-19. Obviously, we want to also raise some challenges that we are experiencing, Chair, that the environment, as we always say, in which the Commission operates has substantially changed, and consequently, the demand for Commission services is very high now. It's getting to all of us now. We can no longer cope because we do not have enough human capacity there in the organization. Therefore, it requires a review of financial resources allocated to the Commission. This we've been calling, but we just want to also table it again to the committee so that we should not be forgotten. The Act 19 of 2002 outlines that the Commission must convene two national consultative conferences. So we did hint to this point during our annual reporting. We just thought we should not let it down. We just have to again table it so that we are not forgotten in terms of the resources to be able to comply with this requirement. The Commission still does not have sufficient resources to establish regional offices. This is a serious strain, and we are saying even if we've been negotiating with other departments and other Chapter 9 institutions to share offices, and they are prepared to give us space there. But even if you are prepared to get space there, you need even if it's an intern to be in that office, you will have to give a stipend or something. But our budget does not allow us to even give such kind of stipend. But we feel very strongly that we should be able to start having some presence in provinces so that we can be able to monitor at a very close range some activities like those that were happening at Engcobo, so that we don't shoot from far, but we get to know what is happening on a daily basis, just giving that one as an example. So we still say there's a need for us to have this regional presence. And our recommendation to the committee is to say serious consideration of increasing the baseline is imperative in order to maximize the work of the Commission. And we appeal to the Portfolio Committee to engage COCTA and Treasury to increase the baseline to finance the programs of the Commission. We feel that if the committee can take an initiative, perhaps we can win the battle in terms of getting just a bit to assist the Commission to do its work. In short, Chairperson, this is the presentation we wanted to share this morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation, CEO. Let us invite members to engage on the presentation. Honorable Maluleka, Honorable Mteto, Mela, and the Honorable Tuba.
Chairperson, thank you very much. And I'll again appreciate the presentation by CRS. I just want to go straight to the allocation of money, the budget. I've got some questions there. You say the office of the chairperson for 2018-2019, you are going to allocate that amount. But for public education and engagement, then you allocate that one. My question would be, what is the role of the chairperson, and what does this budget going to be doing in that office of the chairperson? Why don't we take most of the money for public education and engagement? As you are saying that you have limited resources to go and engage the communities because that's your core mandate, but then most of the budget goes to the chairperson's office. When I look into the CFO, my understanding is that maybe that 16 is million. It's for Salaries, maybe. I don't think it's the salary for the CFO alone. So just my concern was on the chairperson's allocation. Thank you, chairperson.
Now, Chair, I still want to know on the CRL whether how many churches that they found to date that operate on a similar system like the Engobo matter. Because I'm saying this, Chair, because there's also Shembe there, where people have got a place to camp, and sometimes even children are camping there, don't even go to school. Did they also intervene to such churches? And how many that are out there? So I'm saying this just so that we are not being blamed tomorrow that we are told again then that there are this number of churches and we have done nothing. We really want to know. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. A couple of points. First of all, I just wanted to find out, with regard to the recommendations that have been made on the traditional initiation, how does that align with the new bill that is currently making its way through Parliament or coming to Parliament or wherever it is? Do they align, or are there additional recommendations that we now need to include? Chair, then my second concern is there are a number of, on the slides of critical pressure points, it talks to language and language in education specifically, etc. And I've raised this concern before, but it appears to be a complete duplication of what the Pan-South African Language Board is doing. Specifically, if I go to their mandate, and they have as their objective number three, language in education, to establish and maintain strategic partnerships and networks with the national and provincial departments of education, to create a climate conducive to the successful implementation of language, to identify strategic projects for the development of marginalized language. So it appears that what the CRL is doing and what PANSELB are doing are duplicating efforts. And I'd really ask that particular issue be reviewed by the CRL. My last comment, Chair, is with regard to the National Consultative Conferences, and with regard to that, I don't see anything here in this annual performance plan, which is a plan of action that the CRL is putting before us, as to how they would go about raising funds to have such a conference. Now, one of the things that they've indicated is that, or one of the things that has come out during the commercialization of religion report is that there are any number of church and religious bodies out there who are very, very wealthy. And maybe the CRL should consider approaching some of them to sponsor part of these national consultative conferences. I think it would go a long way to getting buy-in from them towards the outcome as well. But it would certainly go towards minimizing the cost impact on the CRL.
Yeah, Chair, thanks. The first question, maybe it's a clarity. It's in relation with this halal food. What is it that the halal food impact to other religion? Is it the investigation or is it a rumor or what? Because we don't want to cause confusion in society. Because we must remember that other people are very sensitive. Because normally halal are used by Muslims. And people are very sensitive with their religion. They might cause, if you are not tactically or carefully in approaching with this. But also, secondly, this in relation with your auditor's report. Where are the auditor's report? I'm not so sure. We're supposed to be audited by auditors. Should say disclaimer or clean audit and whatnot. So you can't just come and present us to a budget without proving that we are improving and so on and so on.
Yeah, I think for now these are two questions. Yes.
I mean, broadly covered. But I wanted just to raise an issue that I think is a sensitivity that's going to remain with us for some time, and to really try and find out if we have reflected on its sort of lesser intention in society. For instance, one characteristic of the chamber church, characteristic in terms of the difficulties and problems that they're facing, they don't have a system of deciding who the next leader of the church is going to be. Either when the current person who's the leader dies or become incapacitated. So there's no system. So what happens is that this one person emerges and he says, Baba Yeshine Nwa, left with the letter. And the letter says, so and so is going to become a leader. Now, these leadership questions can be very sensitive, and many people can die as a result of the failure to manage the issues properly. So I'm just raising it as one issue. I know it's a sensitive matter because we can't say it's an organization. This is how it was to be elected to a leader. I've seen the TA recently, Congress, when they have a conference. There's a problem of whether one person has been elected or not, or appointed. But it's neither here nor there. All I'm saying is the leadership question is a sensitive matter. And we need to find a way of getting at least the senior leadership in the churches to discuss the matter and come to some conclusion. One time.
Comment. Chair, I accept what Honourable Masondo is saying, but I think we need to be very careful about instructing or regulating how private bodies conduct their internal arrangements. We cannot be dictating to them that you will do this, you will do that, you will do the next thing. They are voluntary organizations and they decide their own rules and processes. So for us to go and tell the Shembe Church that you must do this, what has happened in this particular case is that the court has made a ruling based on their own rules and practices inside that particular organization. But every organization has its own rules and practices, and I don't think we as a committee or as parliament should be dictating to different organizations what practices and rules they should put in place for themselves, especially voluntary organizations.
Well, the point I'm making is not for them. The problem with Chapters is that we can see a problem in the future. We can see conflict arising out of the management of particular issues. And the question that we should ask ourselves is, what is it that tends to that? What are the possibilities? So that we avoid a disaster. This is really the nub of the issue.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair. The Deputy Chair will cover. Thank you so much.
Some offices are budgeted more than given the fact that despite the fact that the National Assembly has not adopted a report, but the report is in the pipeline, and the proposal is made there for the, because that's what we are comparing to at least not have to in 5 years, the National Government has reported. And then I think the board was made, we must work it out in a manner that assists us to have it. Because we have started already.
Thanks, Chair, for covering some concerns. The first one about the 11 million in the chair's office, actually, the committee will recall that this commission is made up of 12 commissioners, of which two are full-time, the chairperson and the deputy chair. So out of their salaries, they don't even take a 2 million out of that 11, the two of them. But the bulk of the money there goes to the meetings that are statutory meetings in terms of the Act, that they should actually have 4 plenary meetings, 1 per quarter, and in that very same quarter they should have a Section 22. So in all, this becomes, say, about 8 meetings. And these commissioners are supposed to also assist the commission in terms of providing oversight. So the cost is also about their stipends. They don't even get salaries. They just claim per sitting, and that is covered also in that. Their travel, some are in Cape Town, they are all over the country coming to the commission at national. That's why we are saying perhaps it's important for us to also have regional offices so that they can operate from there and not necessarily travel at all times. But that money, it also covers just 2 PAs in the executive office in terms of their salaries. So the bulk of the money, really, there's nothing there. It's just to make sure that we get the clean audit that we are talking about here when we are operating, but also there were issues in the past that were raised through the ad hoc committee, you know, the concerns that commissioners are dealing with. The Parry report from Treasury also covered some issues of commissioners not doing the work and not providing oversight in the past. Strategically, from 2014, with the legal money that we had, we have allocated some legal money there for commissioners to be able to move and assist with us in terms of programs or the core business of the commission. So that's in that money, the little that remains out of the salaries and other things is able to also assist commissioners to do their work. So that's where we are in terms of that 11 million. When it comes to the 16 million in the CFO's office, there is obviously a 5 million that we use for the lease of the offices where we are, but also for the salaries and also to pay for all the support services that the organization should actually have. So it's just housed there in the CFO's office. And that CFO's office is also merged with corporate services, which is HR and related expenses there. So there's also nothing there in terms of them taking from the salaries. It's just to pay the assistance that we are getting from the people who are assisting the organization to be more effective and efficient. The question from Honorable Mthethwa about Engcobo and how many like them, those churches in other provinces, that we cannot confirm currently, Honorable. I think in the new financial year, when we revisit Eastern Cape, we should be able, like we are saying, we have been tipped that the same kind of practice has spread in other communities in the Eastern Cape. We will be able to identify them and be able to see how we can intervene so that we are not found wanting, all of us. But also, when it comes to the example of the Shembe matter, the chairperson is with them today. She's meeting with the Shembe people today. So we are working with them. We're trying to see how we can work together in order to alleviate some of the challenges that may be experienced. The question from Honorable Melham about the alignment of the recommendations in terms of the initiation schools, our recommendations and the national policy that has been proposed. We are engaging at all times with the COCTA Traditional Affairs. We work together. We've made our inputs in terms of the submissions so that there can be that alignment. So we are working very closely together. But some of the recommendations that we came up with, Chairperson, were to immediately resolve the challenge. The challenges that could not wait for the policy processes. For instance, in Gauteng, we had to even instruct to say they should stop, with initiation schools until this December 2018 because they need to put certain things in place. We've agreed with all the Gauteng people relevant in terms of the stakeholders and so on and so forth. So some are long-term recommendations that could easily be aligned with the national policy. Others were short-term to just, zoom into where the challenge is immediately. The issue of multilingualism project with PENSALP, we also working together and very much mindful that we should not duplicate the work there. We're really sharing, and I don't think we are ashamed to say as the commission that we are very much prepared to work with PENSALP going forward, if that can be done. But really, it's just to minimize, to maximize the resources that we have so that, it's a work that we can easily work together collaboratively. We agree that we don't have any challenge. The other issue of NCC, the plan of raising funds, we've already developed that concept paper. We want to engage like we usually do when we want to have the NCC, the new minister at COCTA. I think actually the chairperson had requested me to write a letter to request for a meeting to discuss this matter. But I think, I don't know how to put it, chairperson, but just to conscientize that the act is very clear, Honorable Melham, that when it comes to NCC, Parliament must actually give the funds. Very, very clear. It does not say when we go to fundraise, we fundraise on the money allocated by Parliament. We don't go on a zero budget to fundraise. But I also want to say that it is fine to say perhaps the Commission should be able to engage other religious institutions to be assisted. But I think it's just a desperate comment because we want to do something. Because in the process, we don't want to compromise ourselves. Imagine if we were funded by Ngobo Church ourselves to do the NCC. It would be something else. And funding also comes with terms. Whatever institution will say to us, we are going to fund your NCC, they will give us their agenda, which then we compromise ourselves as a Chapter 9 institution. So we cry to Parliament and cry to government because that's the relevant place for us to be assisted. But we don't want to compromise our independence in that regard. So we are very much reluctant to really just go for funding even to the people that sometimes we think, I don't want to use the very strong word, but if you can allow me, it's the issue of perpetrators and victims. It becomes very difficult. The other question that comes from Honorable Duwe, the issue of halal really is very sensitive. We agree. Or the deputy chair says he will go with the others, it's fine.
It's a theological matter. So it doesn't require a lay person. You need to look at it theologically because the issue of halal, it's a practice of how foods are said to be holy, set aside for a particular religious institution. And I think there is no qualms, there's no problem. It's not only halal, it's also kosher for the Jews. I think where the problem lies with regard to the complaint is that what appears to be faith practice designated to a particular religious community becomes universalized, if you understand what I mean. For example, if you go and agree with manufacturers of water and say this water should be packaged in a halal or kosher manner, and then there's a sticker there, and the sticker presupposes a certain portion that must come to the church, then this is where the problem lies. So we have had a discussion with the Jews, a discussion with the Muslims about this. It's a matter they also know is at the center of public discourse. So we are wanting to make sure that we mitigate, instead of waiting for this to become a point of conflict, why don't we use this as point of convergence in terms of religious tolerance? This is the point of why this is the case. I think the issue is not about the content, the water. It's about the proceeds out of this packaging. Because in our conversation with them, they admitted there is a levy. There are also inspectors involved. You see, these people just don't do, this is halal, it must be certified. There's certification involved. So those are the things that become much more complex in this matter. It's not about the faith. It's not about their belief. It's not how the food must be prepared. It's the cost factor that gets distributed, universalized from one single faith perspective. That's where the challenge is. Okay?
They are not there on the shelves of every store. They have got their own dedicated store where people of the city education, they go and buy this. Now the halal, you see, even if you go to TNC, you find some products within halal. So it seems as if we are marketing or publicizing the religion above other religions.
The challenge is we're trying to mitigate. Remember that part of conflict resolution is not to wait until it's an overblown conflict. You must deal with it and try to get parties to understand what is at the center of this. So the question is not about faith. It's not how they prepare their thing, as I indicated. It's the cost factor which gets distributed as a result of the faith of a community. So how do we deal with that is a subject which I think parties must also, we will guide them. Remember, it's a conversation with other people. Not all the foods. Not all the foods. Halal foods and kosher food. Unfortunately, this is Parliament. There are stickers here. They indicate halal. Bid deal is for kosher on each and every product. And they are not in some shops, they have a particular specified shelves. But in other places, it's just generalized. So when you buy chicken, it's a halal chicken, but unless you know the sticker, you know, it's well prepared food. It's not bad, it's good. So we're trying to, because if you receive complaints, you don't deal with them. They are saying you are sleeping on the job. So we want to deal with this issue so that we satisfy both parties in terms of what is at stake. Whether there is a model of how to do this without universalizing it, it's a subject of discussion. The other issue, I think, which was raised by member, Honorable Masondo. It's about a problem of succession in some churches. We have had conversation with the International Pentecostal Church, Mudise Church. You know that church is now divided because after the death of the former leader, now the wife has taken a portion of the church, the son has taken a portion of the church. But before that happened, we had a discussion. We did not know that His Holiness was sick to death because we invited him. Unfortunately, he sent his son. It was his last, on earth, last day on earth. So we tried to raise this issue about a protocol which they themselves must develop, not instructed, to see that the church is moving into a very conflictual environment, and the majority of members are now enlightened in the church. And it's no longer like in the old. New enlightened people become part of the church. Even the ZCC, because in the ZCC, women are not allowed to become successors. It's only men. So those are the issues we discuss with them. Even now, how do you come up with a succession which is responsive to your own specific faith, you know, orientation, without being imposed upon by the state, whatever the case may be. Yes, it has been.
Problem anyway, worldwide is about succession. That started almost 1,400 years ago. It continues even today. Do you think that we can solve it?
The interesting thing, Chairperson, was their willingness to engage. So once people are prepared, because they can see the disadvantages and advantages of a succession, because they can guarantee what the future holds. But where there's no succession plan, you are likely to have church divided into three or four. Even the Zion Christian Church has got two parts. It's because of that succession issue. So we are mindful of this orientation. I think those are the two things that I thought I needed to chip in. At the FISD, which is the Forum for Institution Supporting Democracy, we have had at our last meeting, because previously we set up a committee which is comprised of all those Chapter 9 institutions to discuss the matter. But the report we received was not helpful in terms of the way forward. We then reconfigured the body. I think last week, Thursday, they met under the leadership of the public service as an outsider, because you can't allow people to debate a matter which is very direct to them and being chairpersons. So we allowed somebody from outside to direct us. So he was part of that meeting, and I'm not so sure what the problem is.
Chair, I think just to add, and maybe let me be specific to the question raised that says, as an organization, what is your take? The Fair and Rights Commission agrees, and it's a plenary resolution, that they would want to agree to work with PENSAP. If we remember, the Cadasman report is proposing one structure, but the Sierra Rights Commission is saying, let's do partial amalgamation. partial amalgamation, saying that we should be able to, where there are overlaps, let's merge. For instance, your Sierra Rice Commission and PENSAL, because of the language component anyway, then you can merge. And that we think will have maximized the resources. The issue then remains as to whether Human Rights Commission and Commission for Gender Equality can merge. So that is our partial, our resolution, a plenary resolution that says let's have a partial amalgamation instead of the merger of all the four, but maybe the 50-50.
Chair, thank you. Just three quick follow-ups. The first one goes to the statement by the CEO that the CRL can't do fundraising for the National Consultative Forum. And I would refer him specifically to Section 24.2 of the CRL Act, which is about the National Consultative Forum. And it says that the CRL may generate additional funding in addition to that appropriated by Parliament for this purpose. So that specifically then gives the CRL authority to go and generate or raise funds for that purpose, and I would urge them to do so. Chair, then just two quick questions. The first one is, I understand that the CRL has two legal advisors and that both of them are currently suspended, and I would want some input from the Commission as to how long they have been suspended, what the process is, and whether or not there's any resolution to this matter anytime soon. And then the second one goes, Chair, to the term of office of the commissioners, which is due to expire next year, as I understand, and whether the commission has made any plans for succession planning. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, on your challenges, you have non-compliance since 2014. I just want to find out from the CRL Rights Commission, what are you going to do, because your term is ending very soon? And what was the problem that made you not to comply with the Act? Thank you.
Chair, I remember the very same department had some financial problem in terms of the security. I don't see other items being budgeted here in this budget, like your security, even though it's also not clear about how much it goes for labor in terms of this stuff, or whether are they integrating it in terms to the commissional chair budget. And the answer again for the CFO, it was not clear. I couldn't get it clear. What is this amount in the CFO's office?
Thanks, Chair. Perhaps let me start with the last one from Honorable Mthethwa. I did talk to the issues of Liz on the CFO's budget. I did even talk to the figure of 5 million. And I did talk to issues of salaries and other services that the commission should pay for in order to remain effective and efficient in terms of governance. So, and that the CFO's office is also taking care of the HR component of the organization. So that's where the money is. Actually, they don't even have money there. It's just to pay the things that makes us to work. The input from Honorable Melham, I won't make a follow-up on Honorable Melham. But in terms of the law, May is very important. 24-2 may generate additional. Yes, may generate. But so that does not take the responsibility away for the money to be appropriated to do this work by Parliament.
I just want to say that I do not think, in my own view, that Parliament would pass a legislation for the CRL to fundraise, to do its work.
I'm sorry. This is why we need legal advisors. And this is why the CRL is in the mess that it's in, because it suspended its legal advisors. The fact of the matter is that this legislation expressly gives permission to the CRL to fundraise. That legislation was passed by Parliament to fundraise, to say that we are not going to give you all the money that you require. You can go and generate more funds elsewhere. Now, for the CEO to try and put a spin on it that's otherwise is completely irrational, and he's basically making a mockery of the legislation. The legislation says that he can go out and generate the funds that he needs, in addition to the funds that are appropriated by Parliament. Now, the question is, has Parliament appropriated any funding? Yes, it has. Every year we give a grant to the CRL. That's the money that is appropriated to the CRL. They then need to take some of that and use it for a national consultative conference, and they can go out and generate the additional money that is required. You can't spin it any other way. That's what the legislation says. And if he had a legal advisor, he would know how to read the legislation.
Thank you, Chair. Like I said, I don't want to overkill this point, but the issue of not having enough money for the National Consultative Conference at the CRL Rights Commission is not a new matter. It's not starting with these commissioners that are there now. It is an issue since the existence of the commission, so since 2004. So legal advisors were there at all times until even now. So I'm just making a point that it's not a matter that is happening because of this set of commissioners that we have. It is from the beginning in terms of the existence of the commission. So I'll leave it there, Chair. But when we come to the issue of legal advisors...
No, I just think that there's no dispute that Parliament must appropriate for every other person. Departments, Chapter 9 institution, we appropriate for all of them. The issue is that we don't have sufficient resources anyway in the country to give you so much money. Your budget always, like budget of department. In fact, if department, I think we'll go to department and hear what Director General complains. But the point that I think is raised, that in terms of the law, once you have appropriated 4 million rand, whatever money, you will have a space to fundraise. Then we'll decide, can you fundraise to the same organization that you want also to regulate in terms of the laws and other things? Or you've got some business people who can fund it. I'm just saying, in terms of the law, we are allowed to do so. Then you choose where to fundraise. Because as we're saying, that we avoid the conflict of interest anyway. That people who give you money at the same time want to control it, because there's no free money. That is correct. I think in terms of that, it's not an issue, really. I don't think we can. It's just we have not fundraised doesn't mean that we cannot fundraise. The point is that we have appropriated money. Of course, it's not sufficient. The gold department don't have sufficient money. But based on that, it's a start that we can work it out to say who are potential donors who are very sympathetic to assist, even if we don't go to religious sector. Because as we are saying, I think, CFO, that if they give you money also, they want to sometimes influence your direction that you want to take. Therefore, you might want to remain independent of influence from outside of the structure. There are a lot of things that can be done anyway. I thought you were saying we are busy now formulating a budget proposal on the very same issues, then, because that would take us forward on that. There's no dispute about what the law says. Whether you are talking shall and must, it doesn't work nowadays in the legal terms. You have got the right to fundraise if you think you want to fundraise within the law that is existing. But how you do that is a separate issue completely on that. I think CFO, we are right there, that Chair, but I think Professor raising the issue of when you fundraise, of course, there are limitations. I think that there are also very rich churches there. Maybe if you go to them tomorrow, they'll give you money. But is it what you want to do? I think that's a point that we have to discuss. Is what you want to do? I think Professor is saying that, you know, it can't be correct to do it that way. But to fundraise from other sources, you can do so freely. No one can take you to jail to do that. Okay. No, that's fine. And let's go to the suspended friends.
Maybe before you get to that, of the commission is about to come to an end and what we are doing. Two factors come to play. One is that we are preparing the close-up report of the close-up report of all the activities we have done, what we have achieved. Yes, it's next year. And second one, the convening of the National Consultative Conference is a key to receive the report. And of course, in terms of the act, the requirement of who attends, that is very, very important. So those are two activities. But the third one is that we will discuss the matter with the current minister in the portfolio about what is the process going forward. Okay. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps let me then go to the issue of suspended staff members. It is correct that the two staff members, the senior manager and the legal officer, were suspended. I wouldn't want to talk a lot about the nitty-gritties. It could be beyond 6 months now, but one case has been finalized. The independent chairperson of the disciplinary hearing found the legal officer guilty, and as a result, the employee was discharged from the duties. But of course, she has the right to appeal to the CCMA, and that is the process that will follow. The other one, the disciplinary hearing set last week, I think it was for the fifth or sixth time sitting. So even that matter, I do not think that it will take time to be concluded. Chairperson, thanks.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, for the opportunity to present our plans for next year going forward. And indeed, our role is to create a society in which religion plays a pivotal role in the construction of a democratic ethos and freedom. So that's what we're all about. Any cultic arrangement that seeks to destroy those moral values, of course, as you say, the law enforcement agencies must take full control of. But thank you so much for hearing and the very constructive engagement and proposals you gave us. I will take note of those. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for coming, and we have engaged with you from time to time. It's very clear that things are moving forward. But the advantage, of course, what we have raised already, people are talking about these matters everywhere. Even people who were very scared before we have started to raise these matters, now they are talking about it. And then we see blowers in many churches now in South Africa, precisely because it's assisting us to deal with, because they are very good prophets, but also like all other sectors of society, that's all this too. But you can't brush everyone that is a source when you know already few people who are sources, really. Some of them are very good, are doing very good social welfare work in communities. I think we must work with them. And then isolate the criminal element that is there, because there's a criminal element in that. And then in all sectors in society, we do have criminal element. Honorable Masondo used to talk about common sources. Generally, these criminal elements are everywhere with society. We must deal with them nicely. They are there in the religious sector, deal with them nicely. They are also very good priests and good prophets and good congregants. But people have started now to talk about this. That is good about abuse of women, what is happening in many areas there. People were never going to say that unless we have raised it. Now we have raised it. The profile is very high. In fact, in radios now, every weekend talks about these matters. It's very clear that we have raised the bar, then we must engage as society, have discussion on this matter, and then get rid of the state must arrest those who are committing crime, and then those who are doing good job must work with them. The sector is very big, is well organized, and is a very exciting sector, in fact, to engage with. I think we should work with them on some of the areas that are good for society advancement. The element that is problematic, Professor, because we can't say, I think there will be 2,000 priests. Only 200 maybe are problematic. We can't say all of them then are problematic. We must just go to those that are problematic and then deal with those issues there and then address the challenge that we are facing. And then thank you for your report. It's very clear that next year the program is clear. We are preparing for handover. And we'll engage with it again and then see what you want us to do. And when there are workshops that are necessary for members to attend, I think we'll extend the invitation to members to come and attend and have a discussion about this complex issue. It's not an easy issue anyway. It's a very complex issue. This is the reason why when we talk about these matters with you, you may not agree with us. You think maybe we are too soft. But I think it's a very complex issue. It's not something issue that we can just solve it by, as I think Masondo was joking about. For the last 1,400 years, the succession and leadership issue has been there. It is becoming worse even now. Therefore, you can't just take it for granted that there are no vested interests in this issue. Therefore, managing it as the way we are managing it, I think is very fine. Let us work together on that. And good luck again for implementation of your program. We'll invite you next time again for other discussion. And I think you are doing well. There's no sufficient money anywhere. And then no sufficient entitlement for Dube. There's no sufficient money anywhere. But the resources that are given to us, let us use them for the benefit of a society and have discussion upon some of the issues. Thank you very much, Professor. And thank you very much, CFO, for attending. Won't be harmful anyway. One day to recruit Honorable Melham to be a priest. You.
They make a lot of money. What next?